wishing our listeners a good year, and we have to make it that good year, both one that is personally satisfying and gratifying, and one that I know for both of us, Ken, is politically, morally, and ethically one that becomes meaningful and useful to advancing the cause of social justice. I cannot proceed without saying that, again, our program is going to look at the issue of democracy today and social justice and where media fits into constructing that process.
Democracy here and now?
Democracy here and now. But I would first like to say, unequivocally, that Sharon Harper, Bernard White, Elaine Sutton, Serene, Janice K. Bryant, Ursula, Rosalie, all...
The band. I mean, what a word.
Well, yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about that kind of terminology and what it portends for us. But all of you, my sisters and brothers, people who are creative, constructive, meaningful, have helped build and supported the station, who do not have free access to it, and you, all of our listeners, who do not have free and easy access to this community-based, end quote, radio station. We want you back. We, as a labor program, as people who are activists for decades, know that there must be a revocation of the terminations of the bar to access for all to the station, and there must be the implementation of a democratic process that surpasses what we've had. We must be part of the construction of that, and that any methodology that stands in the face of democracy portends nothing good. One cannot in late night hours, on holiday weekends, change locks, deny access and deny dialogue to people, and be pretenders to something constructive out of that methodology. Actions do speak louder than words, and the ends are never justified by a means that includes lockouts or white or black lists, or includes terminations, bannings, which is a word that I, of course, first was acquainted with in South Africa and is most peculiar to hear in the context of this radio station. We want our colleagues back, and we want to be constructive and to reconstruct a process of participation, because this station is an essential connector for progressive issues that thus far have not been heard anywhere else in the media.
It's fair to say that the solution to the problem here has to do with more democracy rather than less democracy. It has to do with the staff and community groups being involved in decision-making more than they were before. The democratic practices that we had before, to some extent, were deteriorating over a number of years, but they were still in place. But right now, all bets seem to be off in terms of imposition of changes by management. And I saw Pacifica coming in here and actually making the decisions rather than WBAI being an autonomous station. I think what we have to do in terms of looking forward is to not only revive the old mechanisms that we have, but also to create some new ones, and to include community groups and the listening groups into that. And I think what we need is a stronger contract, and we need better ways of resolving problems at WBAI in terms of self-management. And that's what is going to get us out of this crisis. And it is a crisis.
And, you know, Ken, I have been the unpaid staff representative to the local advisory board, which for some years has put us in proximity of observation of the national board members. I do know all of them personally, and I do know their names, and I do know their world views, which are very much defined by the work that they do and the social commitments they have or haven't made. And at some point it is profoundly important to talk about what the individuals, the key individuals, and that are John Murdoch, Vice Chair of the Board, Ken Ford, Chair of the Board, David Acosta, what people like Michael Palmer, who's the treasurer of the board. Who are these people? What are their backgrounds? What are their statements? What are their actions? No, it's not about personalities. It's about the way people have lived their lives and the philosophies they've advanced. And with that, though, I want to bring on people who have played a significant role over the years in looking at the question of democracy and media, particularly within the context of this very important station. And I am very pleased to have with us Peter Frank. Peter Frank is, I guess Peter got involved in media issues in the 1950s in Berkeley. In 1973, he became a member of the California Berkeley Local Advisory Board. And then in 1974, he became the LAB, the Local Advisory Board representative to the Pacifica National Foundation Board. And then in 1980 to 84, he became president of the National Board. Since then, he has been intimately involved in the cause of micro radio and media democracy, and he serves as the chair now of the National Lawyers Guild Center for Democratic Communication. Peter, welcome to WBAI.
Thanks, Mimi. Glad to be with you.
And we also have Matthew Lazar. Matthew Lazar is the author of Pacifica Radio, The Rise of an Alternative Network, and he's a visiting professor at Riverside in California. And Matthew, it's a pleasure to have you as well.
Greetings. Hello, everybody.
These people are very spoiled, Ken, because they're in California, and it's and of course our engineer today, Anastasia, is recently from there too. So they're very, very arrogant in relationship
to our
weather.
Well, I think California may have something to teach us, maybe. So let's not get East Coast chauvinistic.
Oh, well, quite the contrary. I was very jealous, and I think they have a great deal to teach us. And I believe we are going to have shortly also Karen Frillman. We're trying to reach her. Karen is in less clement weather upstate New York, and Karen is has been the chair of the local advisory board at WBAI. She helped locate the venue that we are presently in. She's been a producer on a number of stations and has been nominated for 6 Grammy Awards for her audio radio work. And with that, we also may be joined by someone to give us a little spiritual sustenance during these hard times, and that is Father Lawrence Lucas, a long-term activist in many communities. As a matter of fact, I think I see him kind of trundling in, galoshes in hand, as we speak. Father Lawrence Lucas has also been the chaplain at Rikers Island for some years and is involved in unions himself there. So with that, why don't we begin with Matt Lazar? And sorry if we have some technical problems here today. Matt, why don't we begin the process? We spoke about language earlier on. And one of the terms that has been used to indicate what can or can't be said over the airwaves is a gag rule, which would seem to prohibit discourse, or at least it's been interpreted in some of the Pacifica stations as prohibiting any discourse on quote-unquote internal affairs. Many of us think these are news items and discuss them, but where does the terminology gag rule come from, and why should we be concerned about both its implementation and its origin terminology-wise?
Well, what's interesting about the word gag rule, you know, when Dan Coughlin was dismissed, terminated, fired for airing that 37-second reader about the Royal Pacifica Day last year.
Matthew, yes. I don't want to take anything for granted. Not everybody knows who Dan Coughlin is, and not everybody knows what you're referring to. So you have to be, we have to give this the full parameter of information. We are experiencing some technical difficulties. We do have with a new engineer, and she's getting ready to learn the board. Matthew? Well, we're not doing so well here. Let's try that again. Anastasia, you give us the cues.
Okay. Well, you should still have... Well, you still have Matthew.
Matthew? Peter? Karen? We have nobody. While we do the reconnects there, let's again welcome Father Lucas to our airwaves.
And he just saved us, actually.
He saved us. Well, that is his clerical role, I dare say. Father Lucas, I described you as you were coming in from the hinterlands of Manhattan as someone, of course, who's been active for decades in the community, someone who's provided the movements with spiritual sustenance and been into involved in Rikers Island with the incarcerated community there and so on, and certainly been a guest at WBAI and an activist most strategically. I'm interested in how you begin to understand the role of democracy and the function of this media in the communities of peoples that you serve.
Well, first of all, my understanding of democracy, it's people power and power to the people, and that the people have a voice and a say in what concerns the people. Fundamentally, that's what I understand as democracy. I was so sure of where your second question.
Well, let's talk about democracy, where we are, and how we're doing it. We've basically been talking about Pacifica Radio and WBAI, mm-hmm. and I know that you have been a listener, you've been a contributor for a number of years, and I assume that you're very concerned about what's been going on here. So why don't we get your impressions about the current crisis?
Well, it is definitely a crisis, and I think it's an anti-democracy crisis. You see, too often I hear people who is boiling this down to an internal conflict. That may be true, but that's like saying while the wolf are knocking at the door of the chicken coop, that you're advising the chickens to ignore the gang of wolves on the outside and let's take care of our far less important internal policies. For me, this is a question of Pacifica's board. And when I look at that board, I see in terms of membership a very drastic contradiction in terms of what we say WBAI is supposed to represent. In fact, this morning I heard some things that were somewhat comical, but I thought that not only comical, but it was insulting the intelligence of the very intelligent audience that BAI have. For example, one individual who was mentioned on the board, I heard the excuse, well, now he is now retired. And that was supposed to give the impression that being retired, it's like saying a police officer who for 20 years was on the police force, the day he retired, the police mentality goes out of the window. And you know, it was ludicrous. But I see this not as primarily, and I think a lot of folks are making that mistake, a conflict between, for example, two people whom I love and admire, Bernard and Utrice. I think this thing is far more important than any of the individuals. It is a question of, is Pacifica going to change the fundamental philosophy and purpose and meaning of WBAI? And therefore, anybody who collaborates in that, I have to identify as the enemy of the people.
Well, we're going to try again. I believe we have, thank you, Father Lucas, also Matthew Lazar, Peter Frank, and we hope Karen Fullman back on the line. And Matthew, we were beginning to have a discussion on the question of the gag rule, because I think the origin of that and its terminology as it's used in Pacifica is not insignificant for structuring our discussion during the next 45 minutes. Matthew?
Well, it's interesting to note that as far back as I can tell, the origins of the word gag rule have their roots in the controversy over slavery in the United States. In the 1830s, the abolitionist movement took advantage of the fact that the First Amendment allows Americans to petition and redress for grievances by submitting to Congress huge numbers of petitions with hundreds of thousands of names demanding the end of slavery in the District of Columbia. The pro-slavery Southern representatives in the House of Representatives responded to this with a series of maneuvers, of technical maneuvers, which allowed them to table or postpone discussing these petitions on the floor of the House of Representatives. And this was referred to by the abolitionists as the gag rule. The person who was the most vociferous in his opposition to the gag rule was John Quincy Adams, former president of the United States, now a congressman, to this as the gag rule, and constantly went around the country in the 1840s demanding the right to talk about these petitions on the floor of the House of Representatives, and kept on saying over and over and over again, am I gagged or not? Finally, he was able to rescind the gag rule on the floor of the House of Representatives in 1844. Now, I don't think that the people who started to use the word gag rule, I don't know how the word got glommed from that to Pacifica, obviously. I don't think that anyone had that in mind when they used the gag rule, but it is an interesting historical parallel.
Well, language is certainly not insignificant, but let's take off from there, Matthew. The question of a democracy, how do you build a more democratic context? What is the history of this organization, and how has it begun to change?
Well, when Lewis Hill started this organization, well, let's start with WBAI. Lewis Hill was dead for 3 years when WBAI was given to the Pacifica Foundation by Louis Schweitzer in 1960. And I think that in the 60s and the 1970s, and Peter Frank can also talk about this, I think, quite eloquently, you saw something of a democratic revolution within media, not as democratic as some of us would like, but a democratic revolution within media, which had its roots, I think, in the spirit of the 1960s and in the student movement of the 1960s. I'd like to read a quote from something which I think some of your listeners are familiar with, which was the Port Huron Statement of 1961, which was the founding statement of Students for a Democratic Society, and which I think very much informed the thinking of the activists who worked with Pacifica in the 1960s and the 1970s. Can I read that? It's a short paragraph.
Sure.
Far be it from us to ever prevent anybody from reading the Port Huron Statement on WBAI. Go ahead.
I quote from the introduction. Some would have us believe that Americans feel contentment amidst prosperity. But might it not better be called a glaze above deeply felt anxieties about their role in the new world? And if these anxieties produce a developed indifference to human affairs, do they not as well produce a yearning to believe that there is an alternative to the present, that something can be done to change circumstances in the school, the workplaces, the bureaucracies, the government? It is to this yearning, this latter yearning, at once the spark and engine of change, that we direct our present appeal. The search for truly democratic alternatives to the present, and a commitment to social experimentation with them, is a worthy and fulfilling human enterprise, one which moves us and, we hope, others today. The search for truly democratic alternatives to the present. The activists who sort of glommed themselves onto the Pacifica Radio Network in the 1960s and 1970s really were moved, I think, and to a large extent from their experiences within the Cold War University, to try to democratize American life both on a micro and a macro level, both on the highest level in terms of government and on the in terms of daily life, in terms of the institutions with which we all interface. The Pacifica Radio Network became a more democratic organization during that period. It instituted more democratic procedures of advise and consent from local advisory boards. It did all of those things in order to meet that standard. And there was also, at the same time, the emergence of a community radio network across the United States, which was also informed by that kind of spirit. I think that what happened to the Pacifica Radio Network to some extent during the 1980s and the 1990s was that it became contained. What do I mean by that? I mean that while thousands of people were literally rushing into the Pacifica Radio Network to take advantage of this democratic experiment, the rest of the media universe began to clamp down on community accessible local access airtime. We all know the story. Peter Frank can certainly take it from here, talking about the banning of micro radio in 1978, the abandonment of the fairness doctrine, which was a doctrine that said that when somebody says something on the radio, someone of the powerful says something on the radio, you have the right to go on that radio station and talk back. The centralization of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the centralization of national public radio. We saw many public radio stations abandon their local volunteer airtime and change their NPR stations to much more centralized common carrier kind of radio stations, where you mostly got national public radio rather than local programming. And finally, the coup de grace, the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which basically has ratcheted up the price of radio stations because of its monopolistic law, and has created a situation in which many radio stations, commercial especially, really just can't afford, after they've been purchased by corporations or other groups, to provide local public affairs airtime because of the amount of debt service they're carrying. All of these things have resulted in a radio network, the Pacifica Radio Network, in which there is really nowhere else to go for people who want publicly accessible, who believe in publicly accessible local access airtime. What I saw in the 1980s, what I saw was community radio leaders, national board members on the Pacifica Radio Network, local advisory board members, station staff, become weary trying to manage this oasis and trying to keep it democratic, and I saw them lose faith. In fact, I have to tell you that I lost faith also. And I think that it is in that context that the Pacifica Foundation decided to become a self-appointing national board, and once it did, began putting on the national board people who have very, very little relationship to what I, to the quote of the Euron statement, which I just read to you.
Peter, if you could comment on what Matthew with the centralization of the media, but also as it relates more specifically to trends within the Pacifica network during the last few years and the contrast perhaps between where Pacifica is now and where it was back when you were chair.
Okay, well, yeah, big question. Where was I? I agree with Matthew in part, but I disagree with him in part also. It's certainly true that in the 60s and 70s, people gravitated towards Pacifica because people, activists, because it was the one place that there was an outlet, a pretty free outlet for social justice, peace, civil rights kind of views. But Pacifica was never a democratic institution. And I think it's suffering now from a flaw that Lou Hill built into it, which is that its governance was always contained within. It was really dominated by staff in the very early days, and it's never had much of a structure that's been truly accountable to the various stakeholders, internal and external, to Pacifica. But I don't think the issue that we're dealing with now has to do with weariness. I think it has to do with a loss of the distinction between what Lou Hill founded, which is listener-sponsored alternative independent radio, and what the Carnegie Corporation, the Carnegie Commission founded, which is so-called public radio, which is really government radio. There's been a pull, and I saw it when I was involved. It started, I think, in the early 80s or a little bit before, when Pacifica started taking money from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is federal money. There's been a pull from the world of public broadcasting to erase the difference, both in terms of structure and culture and content, between listener-sponsored radio, which is what Pacifica started out to be, and public radio, which is what we see, you know, on NPR and PBS. And it's pretty clear that there's a strong internal influence coming from the world of public radio, particularly Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and also subtler ways from National Public Radio, to pull Pacifica to the center, to essentially defang its independence and its radicalness. And it has had a series of people at the helm, Mary Frances Berry being the most highly visible recently, but the trend in the national leadership across a broad variety of personalities over certainly the last 15 years has been the centrist kind of a trend. And if you look at things like the Healthy Station Project emanating from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, it's part of a whole attempt to pull all of community radio and put community radio into what some people call a coat and tie, rather than the scruffy radicalism of listener-sponsored radio. I think if you really look, take a long view, look what's been going on over the last period of years, you'll see this as a long-term trend. In the context of some litigation that's going on, we've done a pretty careful research into board and minutes and so on. And this is, you know, the de-empowering of the furnace system.
I love our guests dearly, but those of you who are flipping through papers, et cetera, we are picking that up like a forest fire over our airwaves. So just be a little bit more conscious that every move you make is creating static for our air. So just a caution to our wonderful guests. I'm sorry, Peter.
Well, let me, it's probably good that you're interrupting me. Just to summarize, there has been subtle but definite and very consistent changes in the internal governance of Pacifica the last 10 or 12 years. You go back and you can see changes taking away powers from the local boards going back more than 10 years. And you can see a trend which violates Pacifica's bylaws for decisions to be made economically based on the listeners, and forces that are essentially governmental forces that are trying to pull it into the world of capital P, capital B, public broadcasting.
Karen Fruman, we've attended a number of national board meetings. There is a paper that was authored by yourself, myself, Ralph Engelman, and Pepsi Charles. And within that, we try to do a number of things, but one of the notions that's been put out is that there is this reticence of people to move beyond the philosophy and social activism of the 60s and reach out to broader audiences. Is that the underlying philosophy at this juncture, or are there names that people should know and transformative processes that Pacifica is now falling prey to also that are really not about enlarging audiences but canceling perhaps the present audience and taking on a different group of people who are more able financially to pay for a particular kind of programming?
Well, hi, me. Hi, Matthew, and to everyone who's listening.
Karen, are you speaking on a cell phone?
Yes.
Is there any way we can call you back? Because your sound is very poor.
Can you hear me now? Is that any better?
It's somewhat better. I guess we'll make do.
All right, well, in a minute I can move towards the phone. I think that there has been a very big push. I think both of the other guests who have spoken are accurate, that there's a sense that Pacifica has actually been successful and that we've arrived now on this media stage, and this is there's not too much left for people to really be involved with. And I think that we're at a point where we are analyzing audience. And the way that radio has worked best is to target an audience and attempt to program to that audience, and that audience will faithfully come back. And the perception is that Pacifica has not achieved the numbers that it should achieve. I mean, I've gotten that sense very strongly from the national board and the people who are currently managing the stations, that the pressure to bring the numbers up is enormous. I sat through a program meeting where programming, a national program meeting, where there was no programming discussed. Only the Arbitron numbers were discussed. And I think that instead of attempting to open up debate and do the very difficult democratic work, call it democratic work, just call it hard work of really engaging the communities that have been active within Pacifica and really kind of figuring out how are we going to do this. We're moving towards the model that was accepted years ago in the commercial world, is now pretty much been accepted within the public radio world in the U.S., and unfortunately, Pacifica, which has been a different kind of model, we have not yet found a way, or we have not yet explored the way to say, how are we going to accommodate all of these things and, you know, maintain our numbers or maybe even grow.
Yes, Peter, can I ask Karen a question?
Yeah.
When you sort of set as a premise of what you said, how we can work best, how do the people you're talking about or you define working best in the Pacifica context?
Well, what I mean, in this paper that Mimi, has introduced into the topic, we suggested and strongly urged that Pacifica hold a program forum, that whether we do it at the local stations, we do it nationally, we begin to talk about how we can integrate a large number of program offerings into a program format without streaming all the programming, right? I speak about working best by actually really working through these programming issues, because that's at the heart of the problem. There's only 24 hours in the day.
I would wonder if we have programming issues or if we have governance issues.
Mm. Well, I think the governance issues are, we have both, but what the power struggle is over the programming and what's going to be on the air.
Who would you want to make those decisions and how would those people be selected?
Well, I think that as long as I've been involved with WBAI, and this is one of the reasons I think that we are at this juncture at BAI, there's been what's been called a program council. It hasn't really functioned. I'm on the local advisory board. The local advisory board, our task is actually to advise the station on to listen to its programming and to give it feedback as well as to feed in from the community so that station personnel, producers have an idea as to what's going on in a wide variety of communities. That has not been functioning. It has not worked. We have not found, and that's because for a large number of reasons, people have not been interested in opening up that debate. And we haven't found a way to really, in New York anyway, we haven't found a way to really facilitate that debate.
You know, there's built into Pacifica structural reason for that disinterest.
Well, you know, one of the things, I just want to take this a step further. I think actually there has been a finding of ways to open it, but a reticent to do that, a reticence. I contend that there has been an interest in firing the listener base, not per se the producers, although I think ultimately that will come as well, because there is a need. It's a consumeristic model that has been implemented at public radio and national public radio by the guru of the philosophy that has taken hold there, and that is David Giovannoni. And I should say that David Giovannoni, of course, has been hired as a consultant by the Pacifica National Board. He has labeled the Pacifica stations as verging on irrelevance, a statement which was remarkably placed on the website of Pacifica, a rather self-destructive thing to do. But
And it was also meant, Ken Ford used it in the New York Times.
Absolutely.
And what do you do?
And Ken Ford, of course, is the vice chair of the National Board. It's
a
very...
And what do you do with something that's irrelevant?
Well, the question is...
The question is it irrelevant?
Well,
what do you do with something that you consider to be irrelevant?
An irrelevant
what you do
home.
Is you either throw it out or you sell it.
Yeah. Maybe, you know, there's a larger thing here. Let me stop you all.
Father Lucas is in the studio.
Let me stop you all for a moment and tell you again, you're listening to Building Bridges, your community and labor report, and our guests are Karen Froman, who is a member of the local advisory board and has played a fundamental role in radio work for quite some time now. Matthew Lazar, who is an author who has done a very important book that people should get, Pacifica Radio, The Rise of an Alternative Network, and Peter Frank, who was at one point the president of the Pacifica National Foundation and remains very active and involved in democratizing or seeking the democratization of media. And, of course, Father Lawrence Lucas, a long-term community activist and someone who has had enormous input into the station as well. Just to get back and frame the question, what is preventing? I think the mechanisms and the ideas have been put forward for how we can have a dialogue as we've moved into the new millennium towards the end of how to enhance our technology, how to increase our audience base, how to deal with our programming culturally in a way that can increase and enhance audience, how to set up a governance that is much more participatory, democratic, and safe. Guards what we have spent 40 years with BAI and 50 years with the Pacifica stations in California, etc., building up. I'm concerned about what is preventing us from doing that, because Karen, certainly you and I did not witness at the national boards that we have gone to for some time now a willingness to look at our present base of listeners and our present programmers and figure out how we can enhance and move forward. It has been instead a constricting, and I believe, and the presentations have been made by our new program, National Program Director, Stephen Yasko, who was formerly a marketer of the Diane Reeves show at National Public Radio, and the executive director of the National Board, Bessie M. Walsh. They seem to have affected and adopted the philosophy of David Giovannoni from the Healthy Radio Station Project, which would throw out people who were on the work experience program, people who would throw out the sisters and brothers who were behind the walls, the impoverished, the voice of the voiceless, as Mumia Abu-Jamal puts it. They would seem to want an upwardly mobile, different group of listeners who can pay for the programming that they are personally desirous of. Father Lucas?
Yeah, well, that brings me to two questions. When I hear the term relevant, I always have to ask, relevant to whom? Right. Obviously, what is relevant to four cops pumping 41 shots at Amadou Diallo is not exactly what's relevant to the person who's being shot at. Again, I think it's extremely important that we, when we start talking about the primary programming, I think we're being somewhat naive, because you cannot divorce programming from the power structure, and it's the power structure that's ultimately going to determine what the programming is. And if you have a power structure that is hell-bent on ignoring the traditional audience here, but trying to make a greater appeal to the same audience that corporate media makes an appeal to, obviously there's going to be conflict. But to pretend that you could program, quote, relevantly, depending on whom you're programming it to, in the face of a power structure that has something totally different in mind is unrealistic. So from my point of view, it is the power structure that one has to deal with primarily, not exclusively, because that ultimately is going to determine the programming. And that will depend, again, on what audience are you trying to be relevant to.
And it depends on the role of the audience in selecting that power structure.
Mm-hmm.
Karen, I do want to come back to you. Again, people seem to have very little information, which is understandable. There hasn't been that many forums or written material that has acquainted our audience, our listenership, with the members of the National Board, how people wound up on the National Board, what their worldviews are, what are the backgrounds they come out of. We need to put forth that information, because it's not a member of question whether people are good-natured or not and what their personalities are. We understand that. It is a question of the institutions that they spend their life working with. It makes a difference if you have a tenant advocate on the board versus a member of the Home Builders Association who acts as their lobbyist in Washington, D.C., which is precisely the work that is done by Ken Ford, the vice chair of the Pacifica National Board. It makes a difference if somebody is fighting for micro radio and somebody buys and sells media, which is precisely the work of Bertrand Lee, one of the newest members of the National Board. It makes a difference if you have somebody who is a labor union advocate and fights for the right of people to associate and build labor democracy and progressive rank-and-file caucuses that assume control over their institutions versus somebody who works for one of the world's largest law firms, Epstein, Becker, and Green, that specializes by their own verbiage in work that is involved in banking and financial services, security law, working with health maintenance organizations, working with managers, working with employers internationally who are fighting sexual discrimination lawsuits, who are fighting American with Disability Act claims, who are fighting unionization drives, who are indeed involved in the very disputes that we have here. We are not dealing any longer with community-based people who may be local accountants and stuff. We are dealing with people who come out of the highest levels, which is Epstein, Becker, and Mr. Green in particular, a member of that law firm, the highest levels of government and entrepreneurial interests that have shored up this political system. And John Murdoch, who is deeply involved in governance and working with Epstein, Becker, and Green to reform or revise, shall we say, the bylaws of the Pacifica National Foundation, these are very important things for folks to know. It makes a difference how they think about and what their interests are in the content, ultimately, of this station. It is not about reaching a broader audience. It's about reaching a different audience. I mean, Karen, do you see that at all?
Oh, of course. I mean, I think the shift that happened, we had local advisors. And, of course, what many people don't quite understand is that it was the representatives from the local board who were involved in creating this bylaw shift in 1999, which allowed for John Murdoch and Bert Lee to be invited to join this board without any real response from the local advisory boards or from the local stations. There's no question that the folks who are on there now feel like they've got to, you know, roll up their sleeves and fix Pacifica, as opposed to, I think, a point in time where the national board felt that they had to support the work of the stations. And that shift has very definitely happened. There's no discussion of what is the work of these stations and, how can we develop training for people who are coming into these stations or any of the small things that national board could have done. There's absolutely been no discussion because none of them even know anything about radio. Very few of the people, if any, on that national board right now even have a working knowledge of how a radio station operates.
Well, that's not better either.
What's that?
Making the radio stations operate better as Pacifica stations is not their agenda.
No, it's not. But I'm saying that even I think that there was a vacuum. There was a point in time where the people who were representatives of the local boards didn't do a good enough job in creating that support and really creating a good back and forth structure. From my experience on the national, we received very little, if any, help or support from the national. And in the last 6 years, even before this takeover occurred, we got very little input on anything from the national in terms of substantial technical support, which is, to my mind, how the national should function towards the locals. I don't know if that was your sense of it, Peter, when you were involved, but we received very little technical support from the national, and now what we're receiving is the sense of, you know, this is broken, and my God, we've got to fix it. And the folks who are involved do not come from, they've never been, they, I think few of them have ever even spent much time in any of these radio stations.
I disagree with you partly. I mean, I don't think it's the role of the national board to give technical assistance to the stations, but I also don't, and they say it's broken, but I don't believe it's broken. I don't believe that they think it's broken. They think it's wrong. They think it's doing the wrong thing, and they're trying to get it to do something different.
Yeah.
That's a fundamental thing that I think we have to focus on.
Their language has always been, in talking with the representatives from New York, there was a tremendous sense that they couldn't create any change. It is this issue over the dismissal of our general manager. I mean, there's been a debate over the ability of the longtime general manager here and her ability to actually continue to promote and do the work at the station. And it seemed as if, there was great consternation. Maybe I'm naive and it was all a manipulation, but I think there was a tremendous sense of how do we do this? How do we actually, you know, how do we pull out a key person and, you know, continue to make sure that things are running correctly? I think that there was a sense that things were broken. I've had those conversations with people on the national board that it wasn't working correctly. I may be wrong.
And I just wanted to ask about what do you think there's been a change in the phone? Oh, something's broken. That there's been a change of the focus of Pacifica vis-a-vis the autonomy of the individual stations. Is Pacifica really coming in here and doing things themselves?
Oh, definitely.
I mean, you know, there used to be an autonomous station and Pacifica would appoint the head of the station, but now it seems as if Pacifica is everywhere. Pacifica, Bernard was, and Sharon were fired on Pacifica stationery, not on WBAI stationery. Mm-hmm. It just seems to me as if Pacifica is taking direct control, and I just wanted to throw that out.
Let me assure you that people at KPFA...
And let me tell you, you're listening now to Matthew Lazar.
Very much experienced Pacifica is taking direct control. When they hired a firm called IPSA International, which is run by former consultants for the Department of Defense and the Federal Bureau of Investigation, to take over the KPFA radio station and expel the staff, we experienced that as a very centralized way of dealing with things. And I think that it was. I mean, I don't think that there is any question about the fact that they see themselves as taking direct control of everything that happens in this organization to the extent that they possibly can. And they want to put more people like that on the national board. One of the people who was recently proposed to be on the national board is a gentleman named Luis Wilmot of Texas. He's the head of the Texas Partnership for Competition, which advocates for further deregulation of the telecommunications industry in Texas, and it's an organization backed by AT&T. He was recently arguing in an article which I read for further deregulation of the industry, and I'd like to read a few paragraphs from his prose so that you have a sense of somebody who might actually be on the national board soon, if I may.
Go ahead.
Each passing day, here's his prose. Each passing day brings news of technological advances that are changing the telecommunications landscape, and the roles of traditional telephone companies are changing just as quickly. These developments hold a lot of promise for consumers who will soon have services available to them that will change the way they live and work. Think of a typical Friday night for many Texas families. A trip to the video store for a movie rental and a stop at the pizza parlor to pick up dinner. What if you could order the pizza through your television and download the movie of your choice from a selection of thousands in minutes? The best part is, the movie you want is always available. Texas should be a leader in this technological revolution, but regulators and legislators must foster the proper environment. Texas must have a competitive marketplace with a level playing field that encourages companies to invest in this advanced technology. I think this kind of prose definitely fits in with the theory that the object is to target a more affluent audience rather than a less affluent audience for Pacifica. And, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I suppose that you could joke about this and say that maybe, you know, someday you'll be able to order a pizza on Pacifica Radio while listening to the Pacifica Network News or something like that.
But probably it's actually, soon.
Huh?
Probably pretty soon the way things are going.
Yes, absolutely. But it's pretty scary to think that people with this kind of a mindset are going to sit on the national board.
Well, I think that one of the names that's been thrown out, for example, at the last national board meeting that I attended at the DoubleTree Hotel outside of Washington, D.C., there was a proposal for another board member, and that is Francisco Ricciolo. Now, Mr. Ricciolo is a vice president involved in Citicorp, who is in charge of and involved with international banking for Citicorp in the Middle East and Africa. Now, one can say, and let's play with that, we want more resources brought in. We want people who outreach to different community, who have all kinds of possibilities for the technological, the economic resources they could bring to this institution to enhance us, and that we must expand our political, our philosophic horizons to include more people and not be quite as micro, well, let's say myopic in our political understanding of the world, as we are labeled as throwbacks, dinosaurs from the 60s, whether we are from nationalist-based communities or whether we are from the old left or indeed the new left or the new punk hip-hop community. Those are not the people. We are entirely too self-involved. Let's get with it. What is wrong with Mr. Wilmot? What is wrong with a Bertram Lee who buys and sells media, who at a clip talks about raising $500 million and was part owner of the Denver Nuggets at one point, and
can I just add one thing? And the reason that I'm actually actively involved in fighting what's happening with Pacifica is that if that belief system, if they wanted to put that out there in an overt way, that would be one thing, but they put Bert Lee on the board in a completely secretive manner without really, you know, sending his resume out. Their governance rules, as people have spoken about, their operation has so completely broken down. There's nothing, there's been no debate, there's been no conversation, there's no direct discussion of these things or who these, or who they, you know, what they want to do. And it's that we...
Yeah, but Karen, there's very good reasons for that.
I understand it.
It's not a matter of breaking down. They couldn't do what they're trying to do in the open.
It's wrong. I'm saying that if you, in fact, what Pacifica has been about is people who want to speak about things and put things on the table and take risks to do it. Take risks to talk about topics that are dangerous. And it's that is such an offense. You know, it's been so underhanded. Their whole way of operating has been through a series of indiscretions, and that's a part of what I find so demeaning about all of this, changing the locks, doing all this stuff secretly. It's very, very damaging to this little, you know, light that has been shining for 50 years where we are saying, let us attempt to put things on the table and talk things out.
What happened reminded me so.
Father Lucas and then Matthew Lazar.
So that's Richard.
I'm sorry, but I'd like to bring Matthew Lazar in as well.
Richard Nixon and Leon Jaworski, you know, the way the thing took place at night, et cetera, et cetera. And we woke up in the morning and found folks missing or out of the picture. I think there's a glaring contradiction in the notion that they're trying to expand the audience. And at the same time, what they're really doing is the more affluent audience. Actually, the more affluent are a minority. So if you really wanted to expand, if 10% of the people in this country controlled better than 90% of the wealth, it would seem to me that if you wanted to expand the audience, you would be looking towards that 90% rather than the 10%. So it's a glaring contradiction even in what they are, the rhetoric that is being passed on.
before we go any further, I just want to make mention, because we are closing off the show in a few minutes, that there will be a demonstration for that 90%, for the people who feel that BAI is going in the wrong direction and that things have to be changed. That will be in front of the station this Saturday, the 6th, this coming Saturday, the 6th, at noon. And for more information, you can call 800-825-0055. That's 800-825-0055. So I hope to see everybody on Saturday the 6th at noon.
Matthew Lazard.
In 1949, Lewis Hill went on KPFA. It had just gone on the air. He went on KPFA, and he talked about the FBI. And he said in 1949, not 1969, not 1979, and not 1999, in 1949, quote, the FBI is a contemptible institution, and the whole country knows it. When they come to your door, refuse to cooperate. Say, I, for my part, will not. That's what Lewis Hill told people on the radio in the worst year of the Cold War. I have a very difficult time imagining that people who are oriented towards marketing services, surveys, and such would countenance such programming at this time.
We should also be aware that there was a proposal at the national board meeting last held for $500,000 to go out to begin the process of doing focus studies and to bring additional consultants such as David Giovannone from the Healthy Station Project that again has helped shape the philosophy and programming content of NPR and Public Radio International to our station. $500,000 expanded towards the same. But people don't seem to be fully versed in the idea that the content of our programming will change by virtue of who sits on the national board or by virtue of the tactics that are being employed, which are now lockout, shutout tactics, rather than more sunshine coming towards the debate and yet bigger and broader and more structured dialogues. We are constricting and have taken on an atmosphere that is based on fear and thinly veiled intimidation, really, which is always what happens when someone changes locks, etc. Why should we believe that there will be anything other than an enhancement of the programming content and the character and quality of people from the community who have come here over the years to do programming?
And then to pretend that it's simply an internal affair about moving around employees is absolutely nonsense.
But how are we to know? We are told unequivocally that there is nothing that will change. This will be about the business programming and progressive programming as well, but enhanced.
Every time a government makes a coup, they make the exact same statement. Every time a corporation is bought out by another corporation, they make the exact same statement to the employees. You know, I think we need to look at what they do and what their sources are, not get hung up on their use of rhetoric.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me of the fox licking his chops at the chicken coop, and somebody say, nothing will change, let the fox in, nothing's going to change, right. We're going to go on as we have been.
Karen, we unfortunately are wrapping up. Would that we again would hold in the listener community and with these airwaves a comprehensive, full teaching where we do have these issues see the light of day, where we look at who sits on the national board, where we look at the enhancement of democratic structures or the lack thereof within our various stations, where we look at the programming content and really begin to think about the evolution of a plan, the development of a plan that enhances the technology, betters the fundraising, etc. But again, how are we to understand why is it inevitable when there are lockouts and when we have the national board that we will not maintain the character of progressive radio that BAI has had as its hallmark for 40 years?
Well, I think we have to look at KPFA. I heard Matthew on the radio, 10, I guess, a week ago, and I think that I think we have to look. I think we have to learn lessons from what did happen at KPFA and the response. And it sounds as if there are more people involved in every level. Is that correct, Michael? It sounds as if the station in many ways has been reinvigorated. Would you agree?
Well, the station, the KPFA has, we now have a listener-elected local advisory board, which is a unique and first, I believe, in KPFA's history. And we have an entirely new generation of people involved in the life of the station than have been involved before. But my worst fear...
Matthew, I'm afraid that...
Okay.
2 seconds, your worst fear?
You know, my worst fear is that the Pacific Foundation will come and wipe that away.
I think it's a real danger.
Well, unfortunately, we have a run out
right.
of time. As a matter of fact, we've...
Overtime.
Father Lawrence Lucas, Karen Fruman, Peter Frank, Matthew Lazar. These discussions hopefully will take place on the air more and in a structured way, and they will certainly take place within the community sphere. We must maintain the character and quality of this station, and we must do it with the people who are most affected by the issues that so many of us have concerned ourselves back. Again, rescind the terminations and lift the barring of access to anyone.
And come to the demonstration this Saturday at noon at BAR 120 Wall Street at South Street, the Community One at KPFA. They can win here. This is Dan Nash.
And this is Mimi Rosenberg for Building Bridges, your community and labor report. And as always, thank you for listening and be a participant. Thank you.